And next up on Free Radio, it's the April 5th, 2019 edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. We'll be streaming along at you at freakradio.org. Still looking for the studio, still looking for the transmitter site, still offering a reward of $300 if you can find us at least the studio. The transmitter site, you find us, we give you a pat on the back and actually start broadcasting, which would be great. If you want to help us with that, it's easy to do. You give us a call, either at the Huff Line, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, where I can be found. I'm one of the collective, the Free Radio Collective. Or you can contact the Freak Radio website, freakradio.org. Most of what we're going to be talking about today has to do with Ross Camp and the dissolution that happened, well, I guess it's on a Friday night. You can hear many voices talking about that, and we'll be covering places where actions against other homeless encampments, cruel and essentially reasonable attacks on people whose only shelter is the shelter they themselves have set up, are happening in Sacramento and other cities. So if that's your interest, then you're tuned to the right place.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
So let's begin with an interview from last Sunday, which is the day before the court ruled that Andy Mills' police could march in, drive everybody out, fence off the area, keep everybody from their property until Monday, and essentially 200 new refugees in Santa Cruz without providing any kind of immediate shelter for many and long-term shelter of any kind for almost all of them. I'm not talking about housing either, long-term, like for more than 2 months. There's a small group of people who can get into the 1220 River Street campground, the Boneyard Barbed Wire Campground, that was opened last year at a very costly expense of about $75,000 a month. And this time it's going to be run even more repressively by the Salvation Army, or at least that seems to be their procedure if you look at the way they proceeded in the Benchlands campground, which they ran for a week. The no visitors can't walk out or walk in. Even those who live there, you have to be bused in and out because of a pandering to the bigots of some of the neighbors who don't want homeless people walking back and forth in their neighborhood. Or they're going to have plenty of them anyway because homeless people, the overwhelming majority, are still outside this barbed wire campground as they've always been for the last 2 years anyway, or last year, certainly, when the campground was open, or I should say closed, but available as what some described as a kind of a high barrier concentration camp, which did have the virtue of providing a storage area during the day and a place to be during the day and transportation to the downtown area for those who wanted to use it. Actually, they had to use it. They couldn't walk or they'd be evicted from the program. To freely associate, have friendships, invite people in, walk out and meet and talk with people outside. None of that apparently is possible at this campground, as it wasn't possible last year for the people who took this option. And for people who are leaving the River Street Campground, it was, of course, forced on some of them as essentially the only option, although a handful got motel vouchers for, I think it was, first 2 days and then 5 days. That seemed eventually to be what happened, at least to a few folks. And some access to this get-searched-as-you-come-in shelter at the 7th Avenue and the Laurel Street shelters for, again, another small number of people, less than 50 people or 60 people total. And that, of course, at the expense of the rest of the homeless population, who would have to either be kicked out of those shelters or excluded from the shelters, so that Susie O'Hara and Megan Bunch, Martine Brunel's henchwomen in this matter, could shovel the homeless folks into from the Ross Camp refugees, as some call them, into those shelter areas to persuade the court that they were following the Martin versus Boise precedent, which is that they made to the community at council meeting after council meeting that there would be adequate shelter for people for the in the Ross camp. And that was actually on several occasions what the council voted, until Justin Cummings decided not to include that in the final vote, likely under the influence of people like Ryan Coonerty of the Board of Supervisors and Mayor Watkins and Martine Brunel of the city government. Watkins is the mayor, Brunel is the city manager. Thomas Shannon, who was one of the plaintiffs and is still one of the plaintiffs in the ongoing lawsuit, which will be seeking damages for this mass eviction and attack on homeless folks, not just the Ross encampment, but really homeless folks all over the city. And if you want to look at the situation more broadly in other cities, it seems to be sort of similar to the crackdown on the Occupy movement and the encampments that were widespread across the country and across the state back in 2011. Mama's voice.
So I'm talking with
Mama Shannon, Shannon B, the notorious Mama Shannon, Shannon, Shit Kicker Shannon, and I've been a lot of things over the years to you. Mm-hmm. And I'm also a 7-time Poetry Slam winner in Santa Cruz.
Mama mia.
And I have a voice.
And Shannon, what's been happening in the last week that you've noted?
Oh, let's see. I watched a ranger break the federal
restraining
order and tell somebody that they needed to go down to San Lorenzo and sign up. And when I asked the officer, because I had been told it was the officer who did it, I said, excuse me, officer, I have a question for you. I'm wondering how come it's okay for you to break the law, but it's not okay for me to break the law. And he said, what do you mean by that?
I have a shiny uniform.
And I said, the federal restraining order means that you can't tell people to go down to San Lorenzo.
You've got the ranger's name.
And you know, yes, I do.
Good.
And you know what he said? He said, I didn't say that, the ranger did.
And, of course, she is referring to the Benchlands campground that was very briefly open, again, as a lure and a pretext while the temporary restraining order was in force to persuade the Judge Davila and the credulous in the community that there were options for people at the Ross camp, and to lure them away, again, with this is sort of the carrot, then the stick would come at and did come after the TRO was withdrawn, with police threats and the threats of you only have very limited time, get moving kind of stuff that was repeatedly in the campground over the last week after the TRO was lifted. But here's, again, Shannon before that happened.
How cute.
And the ranger's name is Cole, and his badge number is 181.
Uh-huh.
Violated the federal restraining order. Also committed perjury on the stand.
Where did this happen?
So a liar, liar. Right here where we're standing.
About what day? Do you remember?
2 days ago. No, Friday.
What was the reaction of the people to this? Did many people leave?
look around at the big holes in the trash. And this is something I've been saying for years. They talk about us and the garbage we leave behind. If I come to your house and I tell you, you have 24 hours to pack all your shit and get out, and then I come back 12 hours later and I stand over you with my arms crossed, how much trash are you going to leave?
So how many people would you say left as a consequence?
Do you get me? And then they say, look at all the trash the homeless people left.
Shannon, I get you, but how many people...
I lived in my spot for a year. You gave me 12 hours to
How many people would you say have left in the last...
50, 60.
And have you seen them since? Or?
But I've been having this discussion with people a lot. What happened in the press is this became to some people sort of like a concert or a rainbow gathering. And they gathered, right? And as soon as it became serious and it became political, they dispersed. So what you're left with now are the locals that are fighting for their rights. So I'm not concerned with the people that left because they are not the locals that were fighting for their rights. They are the ones that the city keeps trying to treat us like we are, and that's not who we are.
Now, is there a...
They don't represent me.
Shannon, is there a plan, do you think, for the group to move somewhere? I know you're on the council, but have people gotten together to do this, or is it still sort of a pipe dream?
Okay, I want to say that I think this stuff's really funny, sort of, in a way. So they have to have available space or an adequate place for us to go to shut this down, right? So they said in their statement...
No, they don't. They
said in their statement to the community they were going to do a dust to dawn in the parking lot, but they were going to keep it open only 30 days to 60 days. So basically,
and what she's referring to is the Depot Park proposal. That was another one of their carrots or excuses for closing Ross Camp. And I say that not to demean the idea of setting up a dusk to dawn campground, or not even campground, sorry, program, because people can't leave their stuff there, they can't camp there, they can't have their tents up during the day, they can't even be there during the day. It's just a place to go at night, as the 7th Avenue shelter and the Laurel Street shelters are. But it's not a bad idea to have such programs. Would have actually perhaps relieved some of the pressure on the Ross Camp if it had been kept as the plaintiffs who went to court asked that it be kept as a campground, kept open, but have some of the congestion relieved, have the city work with the campers to clean up the campground, separate the tents, set up pathways for vehicles and so forth if necessary, or at least some sort of emergency situations that might come up, provide potable water for people to drink. None of these things were done with the city, even though promises were made in regard to each of these things. According to Alicia Kuhl, the liaison of the Ross Camp Council, who doesn't live in the camp, but who has been spending a lot of time down there working with folks who do live in the camp. The Ross Camp Council, it has to be said, was a self-selected group of folks who took into their own hands protecting themselves and anyone else who wanted to join them by suing the city, and in fact got an extra week of time there, and also have an ongoing lawsuit which is holding the city to account for how they're treating homeless people once they're out of the campground. Because if you think that the city is going to lay off those people as they set up tents somewhere else, as inevitably happens, well, I have a bridge over in New York City which you might want to purchase from me as well.
They're coming up with whatever excuse they can,
correct,
to push us apart. So when they were posting our tents the other day, I said, so basically, officer, what you're saying is you want us to disperse and die alone in the woods. And you know what his response was? It was, yeah, pretty much.
But I'm asking what the response of the campers is going to be if the TRO is lifted tomorrow.
I'll tell you what. A lot of us have gone to San Lorenzo, and a lot of us are planting a mushroom, and I'm not going to tell you where, but we're going to sprout up like a mushroom. I've got over 100 people that are going to sprout up somewhere like a mushroom, because they want to say that a whole area is closed because of us, so we're going to take one section so they can open the rest of it to the public, and we're going to sprout up like a mushroom. We're never going to leave it alone, and we're going to film everything they do.
I remember you made such an announcement at the press conference on Monday.
I've got more than 100 people that have already come down there to help me clean up. They're posting us down there, by the way.
Any other thoughts you want to pass on?
It's not okay to judge people by the color of their skin or their sexual orientation, but it is okay.
What about by the shape of their nose?
But it is okay to judge them by their homelessness.
Fine. I always do. I never talk to you homeless people anyway.
It does have nothing. Oh my God, I might get it on me, and then my friends might get it, and then I can't hang out with them.
Where do you think you're going?
If my friends get the homelessness that I got on me, then I can't hang out with them anymore. That's gross.
And we've been talking with...
But it doesn't mean I'm trying
Mama
to...
Mama Shannon.
A loser under that.
So the... The predictions that Shannon had and that others have had who are in the camp, and even some who are outside the camp, have had that there'd be either strong resistance in the camp and a refusal to move, civil disobedience, people standing around from the community, standing with them, taking citations or demanding the police arrest them first, this sort of thing. While these ideas were batted about and seriously proposed, and I think a number of people had commitments to them if they were drawn together as actual organizational proposals. The day of the actual eviction, which was Friday, the 3rd of May, this did not happen. Instead, the 10 o'clock deadline, it came and went, but by the end of the day, through constant pressure, blandishments, the fears excited by the police and Parks and Rec Rangers, the setting up of strong fencing around the camp to replace other holes in the fence that had been created by campers to come and go, had been done, and I think by darkness or soon after, the entire area was reportedly vacated. This idea of people popping up like mushrooms, perhaps not 100 strong, perhaps not 50 strong, perhaps not even 20 strong, but still, they have to go somewhere, and they do, and they have, and there's also a group of folks who are still maintaining connections with each other, who are the plaintiffs to the Ross camp, the Desiree Quintero lawsuit. She's the lead plaintiff in the suit against the city of Santa Cruz for its treatment of these folks, and by extension, its treatment of all homeless people in Santa Cruz, as well as anti-homeless vigilantes of the Take Back Santa Cruz mentality, who are attacking homeless people, some for the fun of it, some out of the fear of it, some with the mistaken ideological notion that this is their prerogative and their right to do, and that it's somehow a positive thing for the community to run poor people out of town, some believing that they are simply attacking drug problem people. So after the temporary restraining order was lifted on Monday, the city, using its so-called standard operating procedures for camp abatement, which is a nice way of saying destroying the homes of homeless people for whom the city has no shelter, regardless of their needs and regardless of the needs of the surrounding community, responds to the loudest and nastiest voices, and or the, and this is even worse, the impersonal kind of juggernaut machine policies of the city staff under Martin Bernal and his predecessor Dick Wilson, the city manager who really runs the city of Santa Cruz. The Ross camp folks were given 3 days and then told that on Friday at 10 o'clock, I thought it was 9, some said it was 10, but eventually it turned out to be 10, there would be a complete closing of the camp, which ended up happening, as I mentioned before, later that night. Those of us concerned with the rights of the campers and also just their survival, as well as the situation for homeless people in the community generally, a group called Conscience in Action, and of course the group I work with, HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. Both these groups meet every Wednesday at the Sub Rosa. We met, and after our meeting, we went down to the Ross camp to see what we could do, to document what was going on. And there was also a proposal to have a barbecue afternoon at the Harvey West Park. And there was some talk that that might turn into a tent city, a village where people would move to as sort of a precursor to the idea that created Dignity Village in Portland and various other encampments in other cities. First, they came for the homeless in Berkeley, where a small, compact group of campers stuck together, and when told by the city to move and threatened with ticketing, simply moved to another spot, picking up what they had and moving along, but keeping their integrity and their unity and their solidarity as a group. That actually, the barbecue happened, but the police were successful in dispersing the camp, or even the potential camp. That didn't happen as a follow-up. But here's discussions at the Ross camp on Wednesday and some interviews then. This is the day before Get Out Day. Or as the Sentinel liked to fluffily, puffily, euphemistically put it, move-out days, if people had somewhere to move to.
And it's, goodness, May 1st, 2019. I'm approaching Ross Camp from the Ross Camp parking lot. There's a couple of nice pup tents out here that are sort of in the triangle where the road to the parking lot meets the levee path before Ross Camp. And porta potties are still here. And some of the activists are here keeping an eye on things.
And as it happened, according to the reports by folks who tried to use them, the next day and the day after, the porta potties were not serviced by the city as they had been doing before. Whether this was negligence or an intentional attempt to make things even more uncomfortable for people in the camp at the risk of public health concerns and problems, I can't say if, in fact, this was an accurate assessment. But I did hear it from several people.
Talking with
Louise Drummond, Rabbi Phil's wife.
And Louise, you've been here to observing at the Ross Camp for how long?
About half an hour.
About 2:30 now. And you say you had a peaceful observation time with Martine Bernal and the police?
I didn't speak to Martine. I don't like him well enough. I don't think he likes me. But I talked to a policeman down there and the woman who's going around talking to the campers.
Susie O'Hara?
Susie, yeah.
What is she telling them?
She's asking them if they have a plan and offering them the help that they're ready to give them.
What help would that be?
Totes, two totes, and transportation, and
to
San Lorenzo, to the baseline.
For one day or for how long?
Well, she didn't say that.
And also to the Salvation Army camp.
Oh, yeah?
So,
yeah. And you are?
I'm Philip.
Thank you.
And, of course, either on May 1st or the next day that the San Lorenzo, the Benchlands campground, was completely dispersed. I don't know if it was fenced off or removed. I'm not sure how they, I haven't been out there in the last few days to see, but it was gone, according to what I've been told. And the other campground began to open up with the small one-person green pup tents that the city had set up in the San Lorenzo campground moved over to the bench, River Street campground, the Boneyard barbed wire campground, with, I don't know if the barbed wire is still in place. It was the last time I looked and I remembered, although one tiny segment of it, as I think I mentioned before in an earlier broadcast, had been removed, but that didn't remove the rest of it at that time. Yeah, providing transportation and a couple of tote boxes to another place to help people deal with 6 months of their stuff at the Ross Camp is, of course, pretty farcical. Also considering that there were less than 100 spaces at the places that they were taking them to, at least the River Street campground, there is no other campground being open. Transitional encampments having been vetoed by the city council. To be said, at the last council meeting, the same one that Cummings voted to kill the Ross Camp, I think he also relented a little bit on saying, well, we can talk again about transitional campgrounds, but of course that would be down the road somewhere sometime after people have been subjected, vulnerable women, to being outside and alone and dispersed and without the protection of their own unhoused community or tent community, as well as away from services, away from a community focus where people can go and help them and have connection with them. And that seems to be of little interest to the, if not something that the city itself, the city government wants to destroy, perhaps out of fear of seeing an alternate center of power and solidarity developed, sort of like union movements developed in the 30s and way back in the 1880s and different times and places in the 1870s, too, in the United States. You don't want a homeless movement, and there is such a movement being organized by some around the state, the California Homeless Union. Let's hear more.
So I watched especially the policemen in Bernal, and they all looked peaceful. Bernal did not look happy. He didn't look like he liked doing this.
What exactly was he doing?
He was following Susie around and looking at the camps. And
of course, we're talking about Susie O'Hara, the assistant city manager, who has been the go-to woman for this this mock movement to somewhere else, which actually is nowhere else for the majority of the folks in Ross Camp.
I mean, he didn't look angry. He looked sad.
Well, that would have been nice if he was sad a few days ago in court, but
right.
Apparently he was.
Right.
He's the reason, so he's causing his own sadness.
Well, don't we all?
Not the way he is, no, I don't think so. But anything else you observe that you want to comment on? Any comments from the campers? How did they come to regard Susie, Martine, and the police? How many cops?
It was two. All the campers were real peaceful. They were submissive. Submissive is a good word.
And to hear any talk of people intending to, with any plans to move, to stay?
No, I didn't hear them say anything like that. Just thanks for the information.
Take it. Well, thank you for the information.
Have a good day.
You too. We've been talking with?
Louise Drummond.
And with?
Phil Posner.
Fair enough. All right, station with a sympathizer of the camp, Angel, who has been about and around the camp for the last few times I've been here, the Ross camp, which is still set up. And he told me that there just seems to be little inclination of people to be moving to the barbecue or to Harvey West to set up an alternate camp. And that's the latest I heard from him. Keith McHenry
against nuclear power, and so we wanted to raise money to pay back the guy that fronted the bail. And we're doing bake sales, and so while doing the bake sales, we never really made any money. But I happen to have a moving company called Smooth Move, and I was moving this family, and they had a poster mounted on cardboard that said, "Wouldn't it be a beautiful day if the schools had all the money they needed, and the Air Force had to hold a bake sale to buy a bomber?"
And I believe he's talking about of Food Not Bombs way back in 1979 or thereabouts in Cambridge, Massachusetts, which I think you'll hear me mention again.
All right. So then, so we went and bought military uniforms, and we put the poster up at our bake sales and tried to get people to think that we're buying a bomber. And of course, I had a bright red beard and stuff. No one thought I was a military. But we hammed it up, and that seemed to really work well. So then we realized that the board of directors of the Bank of Boston were the board of directors of the company building the nuclear power station, and they're also on the
Keith
board.
Keith is talking about his first Food Not Bombs feeding, which was in Boston, Massachusetts, or Cambridge. And I've heard this before, so I will have to leave it behind. It's an interesting story, but I'll be here for another purpose.
And I resist. Did you get a flyer?
Thank you.
You're welcome. Good luck with the pooch.
And did you get a flyer?
I haven't got one yet.
Well, here's one.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'll be right back. I'm
going to be watching.
So,
would you like a flyer?
Thank you.
Would you like a flyer?
Maybe half or North America, half or
North America. Hey, Tina.
Can I call you?
the flyer being distributed was a flyer called Community Salutes the Ross Camp Rough Riders. And I think we will skip ahead here. Flyer, Community Salutes the Ross Camp Rough Riders, was a kind of a summary of what happened in the court, and you can actually, well, it has been mentioned in other places as well, but I hope to post this and the other several other flyers I put out in the last week online. Where I often post them is on the Indy Bay website, the Santa Cruz Indy Media website. I read this flyer aloud at the Thursday broadcast on this show. But if you ever want to read the sort of the history from the Norse perspective of what's been happening, I'm going to be hoping to post these, if not on Santa Cruz Indy Media, as mentioned before, possibly on the HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom website at huffsantacruz.org, where you can find a lot of stuff, plus these, well, the archives of these broadcasts for going back for decades.
And I've got a different one for you.
Now we're having a barbecue.
And they were
going to
punish
Here's another one.
For sending them back.
Sure.
Have a good day. Exactly. And they did it.
Yeah. Need a Bob Marley Exodus tape right now. That's a loudspeaker.
That's a good idea. So I'm going to go by. Now they're threatening to ticket us for doing the barbecue over at Harvey West.
Okay. Barbecue without a permit?
Yep. Yep, that's apparently the story.
I see. BBQ SP, so to speak.
Yep.
WP.
So anyway, that's the story right now.
So you're going to go over there now?
Yeah, so we're trying to figure out what we're doing there. But there's not a lot of people there yet. We've been trying to get people to go there. But
it looks like tell me they're on their way. I've been meeting people, yeah.
And we're talking with?
Lion Baumgartner.
You've been giving out flyers for?
For defending the right.
How long?
Last hour and a half.
How many people have told you they want to go?
I'm going to go get
20 or so.
Tanks and some burners and stuff.
Okay. Good luck, Keith.
And then I was down at the Salvation Army talking to those people.
What did you find there?
That they're trying to make sure everybody does look at all the rules but when they're signing up. And I was talking to them about access to be able to go from the site to going to all kinds of different schedules that they have.
And what do they say to that?
They said that they're really going to facilitate as much as possible to take people to their events that they need to go to, whatever, you know, probation or methadone or whatever situations like that they need, or going out for getting food. But it's going to be the shuttle thing. But they're going to try to make shuttle accessible throughout the day. Mm-hmm. And then they'll have the morning and end day, and, you know, like I think it's 7 o'clock in the morning and 9 at night.
That's the River Street Boneyard Barbed Wire Campground, now run by the Salvation Army.
But in between that time, they're going to try to make as many available trips.
About 1220 River, right?
Right, yeah.
Can you say how many tents they plan to put up?
I think it's 60, and they said they're going to double up. People will double up.
Did you see it the last time they did this?
Hey, Shannon.
A little bit, not much. I was still pretty remote at that point.
It's pretty crammed. It's much more crammed than this is here.
Right.
So the idea that it's somehow safer than here is an interesting theory.
Right.
Right.
Well,
it's a bogus theory.
It's sanctioned rather than non-sanctioned, right? So that's going to give
unsafe, lack of safety that's unsanctioned is equally unsafe in spite of the fact that it's sanctioned.
Right, exactly.
You
know. So it's the swirling whirlpool of how this works or doesn't work.
The cesspool of City Hall?
Yeah, they're pretty nasty right now, some of them.
Well, you're pretty nice to Susie O'Hara, who lied repeatedly in court about shelter access, or let's put it this way, gave misleading information that I suspect she's continuing to give out today, though I didn't interview her, I probably should have.
Yeah.
Is you know, she's a nice woman, but so fucking what, you know?
Yeah,
her,
well,
in her position, she's doing some shit, and I don't like it when I see it.
Well, I didn't hear her say any kind of weird stuff today.
No, she doesn't. She puts on the nicest exterior you've ever seen.
Right.
You know, that's her job.
Right.
Similarly with her companion, Tina Scholl, who's the woman in black who was with her.
Right.
You know, their job is to appear amenable.
The guy.
Tina Scholl is the... Actually, I think she's a somewhat senior, or at least previous, assistant city manager to Martine Bernal. Both these women have a history of facilitating anti-homeless activity and legislation at city council.
Hi, Tony, too, right?
Tony Condotti, attorney?
No, the other guy, Tony, who is kind of...
Oh, I'm not sure who he is.
Yeah, he was here a little while with her earlier.
Really?
I didn't see him just now.
Well, I mean, their job is to get everybody out of here and clear over the area and then forget about them. That's their plan.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll have to see. It's multiple,
I do. I've seen it going on for year by year.
You've been dealing with it for...
Well, month by month recently. Right. So I don't, unless they come to some miraculous sea change, pretty much the same.
Exactly.
Also, the amount of shelter they have actually admitted that they have and don't have does not add up to the number of people who are here.
Right.
So they're full of shit in moving people out to do that.
Yeah.
Such is my grubby opinion.
Yeah. Well, and you know, you have a lot of experience with them spinning around in circles in this for a long time.
I just listen to what they say, and then you look around and see what the real situation is, and you say, Susie. And they say, well, our expectations are that in a few months we'll have a lot more. They said that a year ago, and they said that 2 years ago. So,
exactly.
Unless there's something really different, and they have some evidence,
it's not perfect, that's for sure.
It's not even imperfect. There's a difference between something that's imperfect and something that is a deliberate misrepresentation in order to drive away the community people have.
Part of it, yeah. There's the duality of them. I think it's both. I think that there's, you know, everybody has some heart. In all varying degrees.
I'm sure Hitler had a lot of heart. I mean, he did. He cared about the German people, but that didn't mean he didn't do what he did, and he shouldn't be held accountable for it. Similarly, it's true of people in positions of bureaucratic authority everywhere. They ignore the human realities because they have orders to do so, and that's what these two, including Martine Bernal, who actually makes the decisions, is doing.
Right. I kind of see a gray area a little more than you do, but...
If you got more evidence, I'd love to see it.
Right. Yeah, it's just what I see and hear and what I feel, so it's not like documented.
You just got a soft spot in your heart for Susie, admit it.
No, I just try to be a mediator with everybody because I see division in all communities. People that are fighting for the houses have a lot of division as well. Right?
Now I'm going to interrupt this, what's going to be a very long and endless string of interviews in this broadcast, all about the decline and fall of the Ross camp, should I say the conquest and dispersal of the Ross camp, and the destruction of people's property there through forcing people to leave it and to abandon it. But let's have a little music and take a breather from this. Stella Donnelly in a song called Old Man, and you probably missed some of the lyrics, so I'm going to give them to you. He's reading sport on the news. White man, white teeth in a suit. He's got that style. And then alone in his house, he wants to take baby out. Give us a smile. If a man makes a nuisance of himself while sitting beside you on a park bench, you may respond as an example 12, or merely sharply kick his nearest ankle. Both hands on the man's wrist, step towards him, ears between your thumb and forefinger, ask him to pull back his head in considerable pain, concern for his feelings now, chat to your friends, words that will keep safe. For one calculated move, this is the moment of decision. Get out while he is still incapable of pursuit. Scared of me, old man? Scared of what I'll do with an open hand is grabbing back at you. Scared of me, old man? Scared of what I'll do? Grab me with an open hand is grabbing back at you. Make so that your bodies are side by side. Hold the soft skin under his jaw. With your right hand and up with your left, you must bear in mind that any pain you may inflict might be considerably lessened by the intensity of his desire. Words that were kind of hard to hear in that song, and of course it's sort of a hashtag Me Too type song.
And we've been talking with
Lyon Baumgartner.
Thanks, Lyon. Walking the levee path, it's about 3:05, and there's a notice on the other side of a fence between, it covers the fenced-in area, well, fenced-off area from the levee between Ross and the levee path, with a little, oh, I don't know, an 8 or 10 foot leeway between the levee path and the fence. And the notice says, landscape area closed to the public at all times, no trespassing, violation Santa Cruz Municipal Code 9.06.010, which is essentially another way of banning people from sleeping, sitting, lying, walking, or setting up a tent. And of course, it's likely, though there are no signs posted along the levee, that there is the same situation on both sides of the levee path, although I couldn't say that for sure. And what I'm doing now is I'm approaching an area where one of the paths down to the Ross parking lot, as I call it, comes up to meet the levee path at some distance from the camp as you head toward Kale Bridge, which is quite a ways in the distance. And there's a, I think there was a table here, or a gathering of city employees who apparently have left. And I thought there might be some more information there, but apparently I'm a day late and a dollar short. And I'm now gonna cut back to a car in full sight of two police officers whose A-frames have kind of blocked off. Aha!
Blocked off parking spaces. That was the case for most of the last week, even though the signs themselves said only from April 23rd to April 24th is there no parking. But these little A-frames blocking parking spaces near the Ross camp remained up throughout the week and throughout Friday.
Hey,
someone's trying to block you in.
So, I know.
So these only say from 23rd to the 24th, officer, these signs. What's the deal? Is that still the case?
I don't know, Robert. I didn't put them up. I have no idea what they're doing about parking.
But if I parked here, you folks wouldn't be ticketing or asking us to move.
I don't know.
You don't know.
I don't know what's going on.
You haven't received any orders to do that.
I haven't received anything one way or another.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks, Robert. I appreciate it.
Yeah. So.
You leaving too?
How's it going, Mr.
There I am, talking with a police officer whose badge I have not given and whose name I haven't noted, which is something you should do, all you listeners, if you're having conversations with the police. Make a note of that as a matter of the first thing you do.
Security man, how are you doing? Good, good.
No comment.
No comment? My goodness, why not comment if you can? Ryan, you said you've been talking to folks who are considering moving to Harvey West Park, perhaps permanently, perhaps temporarily, perhaps just for the barbecue, but what's going on?
Yeah, so it's all of the above. And as we met just a little while before that, people were saying they were heading over there.
But so far, nobody has come down to put their clothes or their possessions, their tents, into this U-Haul van, which was conveniently located here in the parking lot.
They're not ready yet, and they just found out about it. So they got to get their stuff together, and, you know, they're confused, they're disoriented. They, you know, they're not sure about when and how to get their stuff. And like I said, when they just found out about the truck just now, so they're stuck between going over to Harvey West Park and getting their stuff
here.
Together.
I got you.
Plus security issues, whether they go up to the park.
What's going to happen to
their stuff?
And the U-Haul truck, which Conscience in Action folks fronted for helping folks move, and the idea was being to help them move their stuff to a second camping area as a way of folks staying together. That didn't pan out. I think we got zero interest in moving stuff on that Wednesday. But then, of course, there was a frantic move out on Friday.
Right, exactly.
So there's that, too. We might have to provide some security on each end.
And also security at this particular vehicle so that somebody doesn't just get in the vehicle and loot the stuff.
So we need, three different people or groups of people to do those.
Well, that's interesting. I hasn't been organized, as far as I know, but, hey, the day is young, and I'm getting older. So we've been talking with
Lion Baumgartner.
Once more. Thank you.
Indeed, there have been so many Ross Camp departure dates that were given. Deadlines March 15th, April 17th, and then May 3rd, that the people who were in their tents in Ross Camp, many of them didn't know what to do, but they found out to their chagrin on Friday when the camp was fenced off and closed that night. Folks did show up at Harvey West, some with their tents, which they ended up not setting up, but they did have a barbecue created by Alicia Cool and others, including Keith McHenry. And I also went around gathering some declarations of folks who were leaving the Ross Camp area with no place to go and wanted to be clear about it.
And with
Nick Young.
Name, spell your last name.
Y-O-U-N-G.
And Nick, how long were you at Ross Camp, or were you?
Well, I recently got transferred to the newest camp over below the courthouse, and they just informed me the other day that it's going to be closing down Thursday, which is tomorrow, leaving us with nowhere else to go. But
Ranchlands Camp.
Yes.
How long were you there?
A week.
How was it?
It was decent, aside from the security gates and the checkpoints and the enforcement with a guy standing there with a bulletproof vest at the entrance, acting like we're some sort of criminals.
First alarm?
No, I believe military.
Really?
Yeah, he had a bulletproof vest.
You can't be too careful with people like you.
Yeah, right. Bulletproof vest on, tons of guns, ready for war when we just want a place to sleep.
Did you get searched when you came in and out?
Yes, every time.
What kind of search did you get?
Just the metal wand detector.
How much space did you have in your tent?
It was a space for one-man tent, which I actually authorized, and then that's about it.
Did you have to sign a waiver to get in?
I believe so, yes.
Did they say it was voluntary, or did they require you to do that?
They required us, yeah.
And did that happen at the camps itself or over at the Ross Camp?
Over at the Ross Camp.
And that was, of course, denied by Susie O'Hara when it was presented to her in court. First she said it was mandatory, then she said it was voluntary. She contradicted herself in her court testimony. It's sometimes hard for liars to remember their stories, I guess. And yeah, Susie, I'm afraid I do regard you as a rather professional, highly paid, and amiable liar. Although less amiable to me as time went on.
Dr. Woman named Susie O'Hara?
I believe so.
And what did she tell you about the accommodation?
She said we were going to be there for a month, at least. And then we got notice that we were going to be evicted on this...
2nd of May.
2nd of May, yeah.
So, tomorrow.
Yeah, so...
Now, this is the first I heard from any of the campers or Ross Camp residents that Susie O'Hara had promised them a month in the Benchlands. So it's interesting if true, and another example of a prevarication of Susie's, if true.
The timeline we were told was not anything like the timeline we were supposed to. You know, it was kind of upsetting. And
now you were with someone?
Nope, by myself.
Okay.
Yep, just looking for a place to sleep and live because I'm homeless. So I had been sleeping in my car the past 3 months, and my leg got gnarly to where I had to go to the ER because I couldn't freaking walk from sleeping in my truck. So I just wanted a flat place to sleep, and this was the place. And now they're saying we only have another day there, or so. So it's,
you came here.
Yeah.
You plan to camp here?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And were you ever at the Ross Camp?
Yes.
For how long?
Approximately like 2 months.
And how did that treat you?
Good. Good. There was no, you know, arguing. It was pretty diplomatic and everybody got along. So, I don't know. Seems like the government would be stoked on that because we'd all be in one space that they could kind of see and regiment. And now that they're separating everybody, it seems like it's their... not really benefiting them as much as if we stayed in one place, you know?
And do you have an address that you use that we can use in a declaration?
I don't have a P.O. box. I get my information from. It's 3623 P.O. box, Santa Cruz, California.
And, do we have your permission to, if we record what you've said on a piece of paper, write it down,
yeah,
put it in legal form, do we have your permission to sign your name to it in case we can't find you again?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And is there a reason, were you offered shelter at 1220 River, which is a camp they offered? I think Susie may have offered.
I think I may have been, yes.
So what was your thought about that?
I haven't really checked it out yet. But to my knowledge, it seems appropriate. I really got to go today because I got to go pick up my kids and take care of them.
How many children do you have?
3 and 6, two daughters. So.
Were you able to take care of them while you were still in your van, in your car?
Yep. So.
And how is your leg? It looks like it's better.
It's a lot better now that I've been sleeping laying down, so yeah.
Did Ross Camp help you with that situation?
Yes, it did.
How did it go with the Benchlands? That also helped you?
Yes. Yep, it helped me quite a bit. So I'll see you guys later. I got to get going because my partner's leaving.
Thanks, Nick. Can I play this on the radio?
Absolutely.
All right, thank you.
These are the kind of declarations we are trying to get from different people who were at Ross Camp and who lost their Ross Camp residence because of the actions of the city and had no alternative shelter and are forced then to deal with the police, the rangers, the elements, vigilantes, the lack of community, and the kind of medical accidents that can happen once you're alone and lack the protection of the community that you previously had through the intervention of the city and its desire to aesthetically and ideologically please more reactionary voices in the community. Meanwhile, back at the camp on Wednesday, we had Gloria, a supporter of the Ross Camp Rough Riders, as we took to calling those who were talking about establishing a separate camp and holding together as a group of people, essentially, in a way, iconically standing for the rights of homeless people citywide. This group has not yet come together in a clear way, by the way, so let's not kid ourselves. But as an ideal and as a possibility, it's real. Anyway, here's her thoughts. She was waiting actually with a U-Haul van to help people in an offer of a service that wasn't used that day but was much needed in 2 days.
about 25 to 5 on May 1st, 2019, at the Ross parking lot, talking with
Gloria.
And Gloria, you're here, and you are kind of a supporter of the Ross Camp Rough Riders, as some call them.
Yeah.
And you had occasion to use one of the porta potties that are still here, even though the camp is due to be completely dispersed and the ground raised on April or May 3rd or soon thereafter.
Yes.
Have you used these porta potties before, or is this your first time?
It's my first time using the porta potties here.
When I've looked in them in the past, not I haven't done that much, but occasionally, I think there, you know, there was a mixed report, but often they were clean and, you know, so-so, not terribly bad. But you used them today, and you found at least one of them was not so good.
Right, it was smelly. It had no toilet paper. It had. So I noticed in the urinal there were syringes, used syringes, obviously, and a roach, you know.
A cigarette butt?
It was a roach for, you know.
You didn't sample it, of course.
No. And food, which I can't imagine anyone eating, but, you know, I guess so. Anyway, it was kind of disconcerting.
But no.
And the pretty gross description, but the fact that at different times, as I said before, previously these were kept up, and of course these were available, these porta potties, even a couple of disabled porta potties for disabled folks, disabled accessible. These will be gone, and there will be no new porta potties, as far as we know, slated to be put up anywhere in town. Just a bunch of people who have the same needs as they had at Ross Camp, but without the facilities to properly dispose of their wastes. Another example of the city's indifference to this kind of stuff.
Blood and feces.
I didn't look that closely for blood and feces.
Is this one of the disabled porta potties or one of the regular ones?
Couldn't tell. I didn't look to see if it was a disabled one.
I see.
It was probably not.
But you didn't feel.
When I was in there, someone rattled the door to, you know, they wanted in.
Did you have to go to a number of them before you could get in?
I tried one and it was locked. Mm-hmm. And then I tried the next one and it was unlocked and used it. And then I just said to whoever was out there, I'll be out in a minute. When I came out, you know, there were people hanging around and somebody, of course, needed it for whatever reason.
Thank you. And again, we've been talking with
Gloria.
The six, I'm here at the near Harvey West Park talking with
Angel.
And Angel, you were around at the Harvey West Memorial barbecue. Well, people were barbecuing in the memorial garden, I guess it's called. And you say suddenly police showed up?
Yeah, you know, everything was like so cool. There was a bunch of people out here, and we're all friends, you know. We're just, you know, getting the barbecue ready to go.
Hot dogs,
and yeah, there was, you know, veggies and
Children playing around.
We had a lot of water to keep people hydrated. It was a good time, good vibe. So I decided.
How many folks were there?
Oh, I'd have to say there was probably, I don't know, maybe 20, 30, something like that.
That's my estimate, too.
So I said, you know what, I'm going to go ahead and take a walk down to the local dispensary real quick, and then go get some goodies. And then as I was walking back up, I noticed Santa Cruz PD walking towards the barbecue.
How many, please?
Well, at first I just saw one, but I noticed he was walking like towards that direction. And then I heard somebody say, are they going to the barbecue or something like that? And then I looked, and then, yeah, there was more of them up top up here. So I finally made my way to where the barbecue was. And at first there was only three of them, and they were telling us that we have to leave the park soon and that those benches where we were barbecuing, they were reserved, and that we weren't supposed to be using them or using that area. Then as they were telling us that, more and more kept coming. And
how many cops did you estimate were there?
All in all, I'd have to say
we'll have some discussions. Any meeting is a good idea. And then
I'd say about 10.
Wow, that's quite a massive force.
Well, they they weren't all like right there with us. Some of them, you know, they stay back and they watch each other's backs, and while the other ones come and hurt, you know, do.
You might have attacked with the hunt dogs.
Yeah, I mean, like I don't.
Organization that may happen.
I don't get it. What are we like dangerous activists that can't go have?
Clearly, you're one of the Santa Cruz 11, as I remember.
We can't throw the football back and forth without getting.
Watch out for your kind.
I mean, we weren't doing nothing wrong. We weren't aware that those benches were reserved, but nobody...
Reserved for the right kind of people, Angel.
Nobody was using them, though, and we just thought, you know, just like any other...
You never can tell when you guys will go poo-poo.
Or just like any other city park, you know, as usual, you can usually just go up, and if there's a barbecue pit available, you can use it and the bench, so that's what we have thought that was happening here, and that's what we did. You know, we found some empty benches and a barbecue pit, so we started barbecuing, and that's when they came up and started telling us, you guys can't
get much. And that's
why I may have
Did you hear much of the conversation?
Yeah, I did.
Anything else that you heard from the police?
Well, yeah, I actually I started videotaping them, and I asked. I told the officer, I says, well, you know, Martin versus Boise would allow people to stay here after hours. And he said, no, that doesn't apply here. Now, I'm assuming that's because they're saying that they have adequate space for, you know, for people to stay.
They would probably just say, it doesn't matter if we have adequate space. You should go sleep somewhere else because we're not going to arrest you there. But this is a closed area at night.
If that's the case and Martin versus Boise wouldn't apply here, then I guess we wouldn't have an argument.
I think you still have an argument, but it's an argument that they will probably dispute, maybe ignore, or at least threaten you with.
I'm sure they would. By the way, they just came up here, and they didn't. Right. They didn't tell anybody else in the park, only our group. There's plenty of other groups here in the park, and there's still people using the park right now.
Did they tell you to leave?
They said that as soon as the sun goes down, we have to leave.
Well, the sun is still up. Of course, it's getting to be later and later toward the summer, and we have longer and longer days. What was the impact on the people who were doing the barbecue?
We were pretty shocked because the people that were here in the barbecue... we're not planning on staying here. Nobody brought tents, nothing like that. We were just having our barbecue.
Actually, I think some of them did plan to stay, but...
Well, we had discussions of people relocating from Ross Camp to here, mm-hmm. but...
It wasn't for sure, I don't think.
No, it wasn't for sure, and actually, the way it turned out, nobody brought tents.
Hmm.
Nobody pitched any tents here. We're under the impression that people... are possibly planning on staying and riding it out, and we'll find out what happens on Friday with that. But we were all pretty just like, you know, in shock, kind of like.
How long did the police stay?
Oh, they were there for, oh, I don't know, I'd have to say 10 minutes at least.
And they finally left?
They finally left, but the point is that they only came to our group and started telling us that we had to leave the park when the hours were non-recreational. But like I said, there's other groups, and there's still people in the park recreating, and I didn't see any of those officers.
Did the people stay who were with your group?
No, actually, a lot of people dispersed and they left because I guess they felt intimidated, like they were being harassed just for coming to a barbecue. We had some, you know, all beef hot dogs on the grill and mustard and ketchup.
No vegetarian hot dogs?
No.
And we've been talking with?
Angel.
Thanks, Angel.